This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, your community access media station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.
The information provided or any opinions expressed in this show are of a general nature only and should not be construed or relied on as a recommendation to invest in a financial product or class of financial products. You should seek financial advice specific to your circumstances from a financial advisor before making any financial decisions. A disclosure statement can be obtained free of charge.
You're listening to Radio Hawke's Bay. This is a program called Canny View, and it's my pleasure to have in the studio from the Stewart Group right here in Hastings, Tim Ewan. How are you going, Tim?
I'm very well, Ken, and you, how are you doing?
All the better for seeing you, you know that.
Absolutely, 100%. Olympic Games, wow.
Games, yeah, we're excited. Now, before we get into that, and today's topic is based around the Olympic Games, just remind the listeners, Tim, Stewart Group, what are you guys all about?
Stewart Group is all about financial planning, wealth management, risk management, KiwiSaver, and pensions. So we can put together a financial plan for individuals, couples, just to make sure that their house is in order. Mm-hmm. And that's across a number of different points. It's around the KiwiSaver, making sure you're the right fund for your KiwiSaver to maximise your returns over the long term, but also creating other liquid buckets for you as well. So that if something was to happen, you can get these funds available to you if you needed them or for more short-term goals. Whereas KiwiSaver, that's a little bit long-term as well. Also, the most important asset that a person has is their ability to earn income. And if they're unable to do so, we can help you with that, with risk planning, making sure that the what-if is taken care of so that the right money goes to the right people at the right time. And we are located at 204 Karamu Road in Hastings, and also Level 3, 158 The Terrace in Wellington, and a disclosure statement is available upon request.
Now, you've been in business for about 37 years, Stewart Group, so you obviously know what you're talking about. You've got specialists in different fields, or are you all jack of all trades?
Great question, Ken. No, we have specialists. We believe in having people staying in their lane. There's a swimming analogy, which is a bit of a segue to the Olympics, but stay in your lane, do what you know, and do it well. So I specialise in the risk space, mm-hmm. although in a past life I did do financial advice, and then we have financial advisors that take care of the financial planning side of things. And then what we do is we pull specialists off the bench. So, for example, if we had a client that was doing a financial planning process but they needed risk planning, they'd pull me off the bench. I would come in, do my area of expertise, offer them advice, a statement of advice, all the planning that goes with that, and then exit stage left.
Okay, tell us about the Olympics, because it's been exciting. I've been watching. I love the table tennis. I was watching it last night as we record this program. But yeah, Olympics. What's the analogy between the Olympics and what you guys do?
I'm going to answer a question with a question. Why do you like the table tennis, Ken?
Oh, just the speed at which they play.
Amazing, isn't it?
I used to play table tennis myself many years ago, and I thought it wasn't too bad, but I never got a rally over about seven hits, and it's just awesome. Mind you, anyone who's at the Olympics, they're all stars, aren't they?
Here's another question for you, though. What's the difference between table tennis and ping pong?
Same difference, isn't it?
Same thing, is it? Just
a different
name?
Yeah, just a different name for it, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, look, just back to the Olympics briefly. I was fortunate enough to be at the Olympics in 2000 in Sydney, and Rob Waddell in the single sculls won our only gold medal. Mm. We only had one in 2000, would you believe? And you go back to 1984, LA, we had eight golds.
Yeah.
Now, you would think with time, development of athletic ability, mm-hmm. coaching, etc., that you would see an improved performance by 2000. Not always the case.
No.
And sometimes, through the pages of history, favourites don't actually win at the Olympic Games. For example, if we jump back to 1964, a chap from America called Billy Mills won the 10,000 metres. Now, very few people knew who he was. He was a Native American from South Dakota. He ran collegiately for, I think it was the University of Kansas, graduated in 62 before he joined the Marine Corps. He still managed to qualify for the Olympic Games in the 10,000 metres and the marathon. Now, they were held in Tokyo, and it was the first time that the Olympic Games were actually broadcast live on television. Now, it included a number of top 10,000 metre runners, such as Australian Ron Clark. He was the world title holder going into that event. There was a chap by the name of Pyotr Bolotnikov of the Soviet Union, and a chap you may have heard of, Murray Halbert.
Mm-hmm.
Also fellow American Gary Lindgren. Now, Mills had finished a full minute behind Clark in the heats. He wasn't even considered a serious contender. Unbelievable. But it didn't matter because he ran the race of his life, and he went down right to the wire with Clark and Mohamed Ghamondi before sprinting past them both in the final stretch. Now, he finished at 28.24.4, almost 50 seconds faster than his previous best and a new Olympic record. Now, get this. I hope you're sitting down, Ken. Not bad for a guy who didn't own a new pair of shoes until the night before the race. Now, he became the first non-European to win the event and is still the only American to win it as of 2024. So there we go. There's somebody that comes from way left field and they're top of the table.
Yeah. I love those sort of stories.
Oh, I think they're inspiring. Absolutely. And when you look at the medal count, who's going to come out on top? I mean, American traditionally, we've had the Soviets in the past. Great Britain have done well. And would you say that it's a guarantee? Quite possibly, but there's no guarantees. And it's the same with the share market too, mm-hmm. because if you try and pick, if you try and guess, you might get it some of the time, but are you going to get it all the time? No. And that's the vagrancies of sport. And that's, I guess, you could say with the comparison to the Olympic Games. For example, Japan won 31 medals way back in 2004. But by the same token, if you look by comparison in 2004, where do you think the biggest growth in the share market would have been in 2004?
Well, it'd have to be IT, wouldn't it?
Yeah, sure. And look, I didn't ask that question properly. I apologise, Ken. In terms of the country,
ooh, China. I'd have to say China.
Yeah, great guess, but it's actually Colombia.
Oh, really?
Growth of 123.4%.
What were they selling?
I couldn't answer that directly. We wouldn't have enough time. But it just shows that you need a diversified share portfolio across different global markets to give you those opportunities. And it comes back to the analogy of time in the share market, not timing. That's the key to it.
That's right. Although, you know, I guess that the prediction I heard for New Zealand going into the medals was that we're probably going to bring back 14. Perhaps not. But
where do you think we'll go? Well, how many? Well, what do you reckon?
At the moment, we've got one, haven't we? We've got one gold medal at the moment.
That's it.
We'll probably do some more in the rowing. But I guess these athletes, they've trained for a long time, just like we're going to buy shares and we're going to think, okay, I'll look at a long term. Some of these athletes have been training for years and it doesn't happen for them. And that could be the same for our investments, couldn't it? That when we buy initially, you say, got to be there for the long haul. What if we're there for the long haul and it doesn't work? How do we get out of that?
That's where diversification is so important, because if you invest in a particular area of stocks or a company or have a certain flavor, a certain exposure to a certain market, and that falls, you've kind of got to be careful you don't have all your eggs in one basket. So the key analogy when it comes to investments, and it's been around for a long time, is the diversification. So if one market's down, the other one may be up. So it gives you a little bit of stability. I mean, again, I'll just make the analogy back to annual returns in 2020. If we looked at, for example, Australia. In 2020, the Olympic medal table, Australia, they got 46. So pretty good. Excellent, in fact. So then if we had a look at what the USA was doing in 2020, return was 10%.
Mm-hmm.
New Zealand, 9.2. So, again, we see a little wavy little line, but generally speaking, the trajectory is on the climb.
Yeah.
And that's the most important thing. But markets go up, markets go down. If you spread across different asset classes, if you think globally, then over the medium to long term, you should get better than average rates of return.
So we knock on your door and we say, look, you've come for some advice and we understand diversification is the way to go. And is it as simple as me saying, well, I've got this much money to invest, Tim, you do what you like with it and I'll come back and see you in a year's time or we'll see how we're going? Or do we get to sit down together and you say, well, I think you should put a bit here and you put a bit in that company, a bit in that company, and you put a bit in this real estate company. Is that how it works or not?
Yeah, it's about sitting down and understanding what your goals are, where you are in life, what the future holds for you, what your financial goals are. That is most important, because we don't have a one-size-fits-all. We need to understand the person. We need to understand you know, their family situation and perhaps where they've been in the past and where they're going in the future. And then we will create a bespoke plan to suit that individual. And it can be around, for example, some people might say, look, I want to leave a certain nest egg to my children. Mm-hmm. So our planning will feature that. Now, the important thing is that if you want international travel, if you want a new car, if you want a few other of the enjoyable things of life, then if you constantly take it out of your portfolio, it's not going to achieve what you set out to. But we can plan for that as long as you're prepared for it perhaps to flatten out at a certain point of time. Because some people might turn around and say, look, I would like to earn a sound rate of return, but I don't have anyone to leave my money to, but I want to live life. So we will plan a portfolio, a process, a statement of advice all around that. Whereas other people might say, look, I want to get to 80 and I want to pass $500,000 to my two children. If that's the case, we will plan around that. So it's just around making sure that it matches exactly what the client's goals and objectives are. And we will coach and help you keep on track. Meet every 6 months, give you updates, reassure you perhaps that you're heading in the right direction, because the worst thing is if people have a bit of a dip in terms of their investment or where the markets are, they pull it out straight away. That loss is realised. Stay on the bus, stay in your seat and focus on the journey. Out through the windscreen, not in the rear vision mirror.
Yeah. I think that possibly in the circle that I travel anyway, not one of my peers or my friends, colleagues and whatnot don't look at the market with rose-tinted glasses anymore. What they're saying, well, it's doom and gloom out there. You know, they're finding it hard to make headway. Everything's going up, you name it. Every time you turn around, something's increased in price. From your point of view as a financial advisor, what are you saying to those people? Is there a light at the end of the tunnel coming? Or
there always is. There always is light at the end of the tunnel, Ken. Absolutely, 100%. The key thing is control what you can control. Have a budget and have a plan and forego perhaps a little bit of consumption today for tomorrow. Now, this is unpalatable for some people, and I totally get that. I can be one of those people. But at the end of the day, I reflect and say, well, okay, what can I do without? What are the luxuries of life that I can do without? And I don't live an exorbitant lifestyle, just the odd nice lemonade occasionally, but you know, I don't drive a Ferrari or a Porsche. But by the same token, I still want to be able to maintain my health, and that's my most important focus right now at the moment is my health, so that when I do get to retirement, I can do a bit of travelling and I can get off the plane okay. I don't have to be wheeled off the plane. In fact, I can get on the plane to start with.
Yeah, that's
even more so, the plane can get off the ground and I'm not sort of obese and carrying any extra baggage, as it were. Excuse my turn of phrase there, Ken.
So before we came to where we were chatting a little bit about bricks and mortar.
Sure.
And I heard an interesting, it wasn't quite a statistic, but someone was saying that in a few years' time, not that many years' time, I'll probably still be alive to see it, that 60% of New Zealanders are likely to be renting. Well, I just wonder, you know, if we're looking at having a diverse portfolio, we might be best to say, let's get into bricks and mortar, because if there are so many people renting, who's going to be buying the houses? Who's going to be building the houses?
That's a good question. Then you answer the question with a question, and how do people get into bricks and mortar? What's the planning around that? Can they forego that consumption today to get a reasonable deposit? Do they look to partner up with a sibling to go as a joint borrower, et cetera, and then they get to a point when they can exit out? But remember, bricks and mortar is very important, but it's only one part of a balanced portfolio. And the key thing is to have diversification across the different asset classes, because quite often people get their government valuation and they see perhaps their properties increase from 250,000 to 500,000. So it's a gain of 250,000 and they think, oh my goodness, I'm wealthy. But how do you get that wealth out? Yeah. Do you go to the bank and borrow that money to invest in the share market? Maybe not, probably, because it's possibly a slightly risky situation because you're having to pay interest on that borrowing. Do you sell your house to get the 250,000 you've gained? What are you going to live in? You're going and buying in the market. So it's that Kiwi mindset of trading huts that creates the wealth often in the past, and we just need to get the balance right between trading huts, bricks and mortar, and also being a little bit more I'm loath to use the word sophisticated, but looking at it from a global perspective, taking advantage of the global markets, how they're moving, how they're progressing. Because, again, in a past life, I had quite a bit to do with people from particularly the United States of America. And maybe the education system is different over there, not really sure. But they were taught from a very early age that shares and stocks and portfolios were a good complement alongside the bricks and mortar. And you can't compare America to New Zealand.
No.
Let's not do that. But maybe that's some of the education aspect we need to teach our younger people today. You know, diversification, but also foregoing consumption, because we have this FOMO thing. Because Ken's got an Aston Martin, Tim thinks he should have an Aston Martin. So it's just a bit of a sword that sort of slides around, doesn't it, and can jab people if it's not, I guess, directed in the right way.
I guess Kiwis and to some, in some respects, Australians, we're sort of fixated with owning a house, aren't we? I mean, you know, whereas if you lived in England or Europe, and in some cases the US of A, I guess, they're used to living in apartments and not owning houses. What makes us so different, do you think?
I think it probably goes back to our colonial roots. It goes back from the pioneers that came here and colonialised New Zealand, you know, back in the late 1700s, 1800s, and the first thing you had to do was have a roof over your head once you've been able to get the land that the roof is going to be built on. And it just flows on from there, because you make a valid point. You go to a number of European countries and they have shared apartment blocks. There's a part ownership. There's common ground. You know, there's green areas and pools and bits and pieces. And people just accept that, you see.
Yeah.
They don't have the fixation of having to have a quarter acre, having to have a garage, having to have a car. Because, for example, if you went to Holland, you'd be riding around on your bike. Mm. You've got good infrastructure. You've got trains that can take you from A to B. Heaven forbid, you can go from France to England through the tunnel. Yeah. I mean, unbelievable. We're just a little bit distant from that in New Zealand, and that's where we probably need a little bit of, I guess, critical thinking, inspirational leadership, and maybe just changing the mindset. And the other thing is people need to understand that just because you don't own a house, you're not a bad person.
No,
you
not.
Haven't failed in life. It's just you've chosen a different direction, and that's a high five. No problem, you know. That's the whole mindset that possibly needs to be changed. Because, again, somebody that doesn't own a home, they may have a magnificent portfolio tucked away that's earning them some good passive income that they can, you know, pass on to family, or it provides for them in their retirement, which is so important.
If you had your time over again, Tim, and perhaps knowing what you know now, would you buy a house?
Yes, I would. I would. But also, I wouldn't probably spend my money on rubbish.
Mm.
And also, I would jump into a managed portfolio right at an early age, and I would put money in that. I knew of a gentleman who plays rugby at a very, very high level, and he was a very smart person. He spoke to one of his teammates, and he said, you should be doing ABCD. And this other player did exactly that, and over a period of 20-odd years, it's provided a fantastic nest egg for his retirement and future life.
And on that note, just before I let you go, Tim, just remind our listeners, we want any sound financial advice. Where do we get it?
We get it from Stewart Group, and we're located at 204 Karamu Road, North in Hastings, also at Level 3, 158 The Terrace in Wellington. You can give us a call, and that number is 06-6504-335, or my cell phone number 027-666-338, and again, a disclosure statement is available upon request.
The information provided or any opinions expressed in this show are of a general nature only and should not be construed or relied on as a recommendation to invest in a financial product or class of financial products. You should seek financial advice specific to your circumstances from a financial advisor before making any financial decisions. A disclosure statement can be obtained free of charge.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, your community access media station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.